It's not a bad idea to bring some mindful awareness into our life every day. Because again, it's who we are and how we show up that has the biggest impact on pretty much everything we do. And especially in interaction with children, because of the dependence of children. So in two of my books, I begin with the teaching of Krishnamurti, who was a spiritual teacher in the 70s, very well known, who said, action has meaning only in relationship, and without understanding relationship, action on any level will only be in conflict. The understanding of relationship is infinitely more important than the search for any plan of action. Now, that's kind of interesting because my book on ADHD, which is the first book that I wrote, in Canada the title was Scattered Minds, How Attention Deficit Originates, Scattered Minds, A New Look at the Origins and Healing of Attention Deficit Disorder. The American title, which was for sale here, the American publisher called it Scattered. They dropped the word minds. They didn't think the American public would understand that word. I don't know why that is. But the same publisher then brought another book called Scattered Minds on the same subject, just to confuse things by a different doctor. But it's the subtitle that interested me, because the American subtitle was How Attention Deficit Disorder Originates and What You Can Do About It. So it's right away that, what can we do? What can we do? Canadian title said, A New Look. And I'm saying, well, let's look at something first. Let's actually understand it. Because how we respond to a problem has to do with how we understand it, how we see it. So the perception is much more important than the plan of action. And Krishnamurti says that the most important thing is relationship. With understanding relationship, any plan of action will only breed conflict. So it's from that perspective that we need to look at childhood behaviors. Now, I'll just stop here for a moment. We're going to take a break at 10:30, but before I go on, any questions on what I've said so far? Anything that's not clear or anything that you want? Yes, please.
Are you seeing a connection between ADHD and something like birth order?
ADHD and birth order, well, let me come to that later. I don't know if there's a direct relationship. But birth order is one of the things that can affect how a child develops, for sure. Yeah?
Are you working currently with physicians in the United States to
encourage looking
at
some of
the reduction
of
using medication?
Am I working with doctors in the United States? I don't have any formal relationship with anybody. I did lecture recently at the University of Arizona Center for Integrated Medicine, Dr. Andrew Weil. So when I'm asked, I do, but I don't have any working relationship. Yeah.
There was a spirit group conference in California, and they had a medical doctor speak, and I don't remember her name, but she said in all the years that she's practiced, she said rarely do I do a medication because you're still trying to build that child's brain.
Right.
And so anytime you do that, but there was a young girl that was 4 that was given some medication and she died, and so they are really looking seriously at monitoring that medication more.
Yeah, well, good. And that's a good thing. But again, the general trend is still very much to medicate kids. So let me launch into, I'll tell you a little bit about ADHD, and the reason I start with that is A, because it's a good template for understanding all childhood developmental problems. And secondly, it's the one I'm very familiar with, having been diagnosed with it myself. So my own diagnosis, at the time I was the coordinator of the palliative care unit at the Vancouver Hospital, working with terminally ill people, and the social worker on the unit, Betsy Jo Spicer, a 38 years old woman, asked to have coffee with me. And she was all excited. I said, sure, let's have coffee. So we did. And she told me she'd just been diagnosed with adult ADHD, which I didn't know existed, really. Nobody told me about that. But 3 minutes into the conversation, I realized why it was with me that she wanted to have coffee. Because everything she said about herself, I recognized about myself. So I just got it. You know, this is it. So let me read to you from the first chapter of my book, Scattered. To dip my toe in was to know that unawares I had been immersed in it all my life up to my neck. This realization may be called the stage of ADD epiphany, the annunciation, characterized by elation, insight, enthusiasm, and hope. seemed to me that I had found a passage to those dark recesses of my mind from which chaos issues without warning, hurling thoughts, plans, emotions, and intentions in all directions. I felt I had discovered what it was that had always kept me from attaining psychological integrity, wholeness, the reconciliation and joining together of the disharmonious fragments of my mind. ADD seemed to explain many of my behavior patterns, thought processes, childish emotional reactions, my workaholism and other addictive tendencies, the sudden eruptions of bad temper and complete irrationality, the conflicts in my marriage, and my Jekyll and Hyde ways of relating to my children. So I thought, okay, now I finally understand myself here. And now, ADHD, when it's fully present, has got three characteristics. They don't all have to be there, but the three characteristics, the first one is poor impulse control. So people with ADHD lack impulse control, so that whatever arises for them, they act it out right away. You want something, you go for it. So the adult will do a lot of impulse buying. Children will interrupt you, or they'll blurt out whatever's in their minds, and so they'll say the inappropriate things very often, because there's no regulation of impulses. Now, impulse control, as I'll tell you, is the job of a certain part of the cortex, the gray matter of the brain. What other condition, by the way, in adults is characterized by poor impulse control? Saliently. Addiction. The addicts lack impulse control. In other words, you know that something is bad for you, but you still do it. In fact, if you do brain scans on drug addicts, the commonest finding is abnormality in the part of the brain that regulates impulses. So I'll say more about that later. The same thing is true for ADHD kids, autistic kids, and so on. They lack impulse control, which is one of the reasons that ADHD is such a significant risk factor for addiction, as I can tell you from my own personal behavior. Now, so poor impulse control is one of the characteristics. So with that in mind then, I should also tell you before I read you the next paragraph, is that as a doctor, I was never one to be too quick with the prescription pad. I was always much more interested in talking with people and figuring out what we could do, you know, without pharmacology. If needed, I prescribe, of course, but that wasn't my first response, except when it came to myself. Okay? With an impatience and lack of judgment characteristic of ADD, I had already begun to self-medicate, even before the formal diagnosis. A sense of urgency typifies attention deficit disorder, a desperation to do immediately whatever it is that one may desire at the moment, be it an object, an activity, or a relationship. And there was something else here too, well expressed by a woman who some months later came for help. It would be nice to get a break for myself for at least a little while, she said, a sentiment I fully understood. One longs to escape the fatiguing, ever-spinning, ever-churning mind. I took a Ritalin and a higher than recommended initial dose on the very day I first heard about attention deficit disorder. Now, you can't do this, but I can, because I'm a doctor. So I just go to one of my buddies and, you know, Bev, Dr. Bev Spring at Palliative Care at Vancouver Hospital, hey, Bev, I think I've got ADD. Can you give me some Ritalin? Oh, sure, how much do you want? Now, this is medical secrets I'm giving here, but it's not good practice. And on the principle that if a bit of Ritalin is good, then more Ritalin is even better, I took a higher than recommended initial dose. Within minutes, I felt euphoric and present, experienced myself as full of insight and love. My wife thought I was acting weird. You look stoned was her immediate comment. Well, within a few days, the Ritalin really helped me focus. I mean, it works within half an hour. And I was focused. And within a couple of days, I was very depressed, because that's one of its potential side effects. Now, that doesn't mean it would have that impact on you, but it did on me, so I was really depressed. I have a depressive tendency anyway, so the Ritalin made me very depressed. And so I got off that and saw a psychiatrist. I was formally diagnosed with ADHD, and I was given dexedrine, another stimulant, which made me focused, and I became a much more efficient workaholic as a result, and so on and so forth. But what I didn't buy into right away was the medical idea that it's a genetic disorder. And I didn't buy into that despite the fact that two of my kids have been diagnosed subsequently. And I could see that right away. As soon as I understood it, I could see buy into the genetic idea right from the beginning. I'll tell you why in a moment. But what are the other characteristics of ADD then? The other characteristics are physical hyperactivity, so that there's less self-control of the body, so that you're fidgety and doodling and your legs are pumping all the time, you have trouble sitting still, you might have motor mouth, you have trouble stopping speaking, just less self-regulation. Now that doesn't have to be there, by the way, so that you can have ADD without the hyperactivity. And the boys tend to be more hyperactive, the girls tend to just be absent-minded, so that you don't notice the hyperactivity so much, so the girls don't get diagnosed so much. Because in a classroom, who's the one that gets noticed? It's the hyperactive boy who can't sit still. But the girl who sits there kind of tuned out at the back of the classroom, she doesn't cause any problems. And the squeaky wheel, or the wheel that's not squeaky, doesn't get the grease, you know, as you know. So the second trait is hyperactivity. And the third trait is, so the first one is impulse control, so you interrupt people in conversation, you act out, you can't stand waiting in line, you jump ahead of people. And the third characteristic, and the salient one, is absent-mindedness. So you just, mind is literally absent. So your mind is not on what's in front of you, which leads to poor finishing, because you start doing something, like you start doing your homework. Or in my case, as I described in the book, I start cleaning my room. You know, and of course, that distractibility, that absent-mindedness, creates chaos, because mind is just not there. So then you go and clean your room, and full of good intentions, but because you're distractible, you notice a book on the floor, and before you put it back on the shelf, you open up the book and you start reading it, and that starts another train of thought. And an hour later, your room is no better than it was. And then you start looking for a pair of socks, or the other half of a pair of socks. You know, socks, how they disappear. By the way, I actually caught one the other day, and I know how they do it. You know how they do it? Socks. I was taking up the laundry from downstairs, and as I got upstairs, I noticed that one sock had attached itself to my jacket. And I know what the plan was. The plan was that as soon as I went outside, it was going to jump up and run away. So they're clever, these socks. But anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah, you go to clean your room and you don't finish it. So these kids start doing their homework, but they get distracted, so 5 minutes later they're onto something else. So poor attention skills, and then disorganization and the chaos. So these are the three characteristics: poor impulse control, physical hyperactivity, which may or may not be there, and absent-mindedness. Now, the reason that I didn't buy into the genetic hypothesis, because they already understood something about absent-mindedness. It's not a disease. What is tuning out actually? I've already given you a hint today. What is it actually? It's an escape from too much stress. From too much stress. Now, if I were to stress you right now, you'd have three healthy options. What would they be, by the way? Three healthy options. What could you do? What's that? You can walk away, you can just leave. That's a perfectly healthy option. What's another? Sorry? No, I'm talking about healthy options now. Well, you could just tell me to stop it. You got to assert yourself. You fight back. That's the second. The third healthy option, if you couldn't fight back or escape because I was too powerful, but given that there's 100 people in a room with you, you could ask for help. So the three healthy options to a stressed situation is to fight back, or to assert yourself, to escape, or to seek help. Now, if those weren't available to you, that's when you would tune out. And you wouldn't tune out, by the way. You don't do it consciously. You don't say to yourself, I'm going to tune out now. You could. But for the most part, it's an unconscious brain defense. The brain has a limited number of defenses against overwhelming stress. Each of those defenses, as that article I quoted you from Pediatrics, it begins as coping mechanisms, ends up as pathology. Each of those brain defenses, and I'll tell you the two later on, are adaptive in the short term, but negative in the long term. becomes a long-term trait that now becomes pathological. So we go from a state to a trait. And this is how to understand childhood development disorders, that they go from states to traits. So in the short term, that tuning out may have helped me. But in the long term, that short-term state may have helped me, but if it becomes a trait and it shows up all the time, now it gets in my way. So I understood that about tuning out. Now, in saying this, I'm not saying that the problem is not biological, by the way. What I'm saying is that the biology is actually shaped by the environment. And that's what I'll be telling you after the break. But let me tell you a little bit about my own ADHD and what's at the basis of it. So I was born in 1944 in Budapest, Hungary, January, to Jewish parents. Now Hungary at that time had the only Jewish population in Eastern Europe that had yet not been exterminated. And then in March of 44, the Germans occupied Hungary. So the German army marches into Budapest, the Wehrmacht, when I'm 2 months old. Now, my father was away in forced labor. My mother and I were in Budapest when the Germans marched in. Now, the Jews of Hungary may not have known about the horrors of the camps and the genocide, but they certainly knew that the Germans were a great threat. The day after the Wehrmacht occupied Budapest, my mother phones the pediatrician and says, "Would you please come and see Gabor, because he's crying all the time." And the pediatrician says, "Of course I will come, but I should tell you, all my Jewish babies are crying." Now, as an infant, as a two-month-old, what could I possibly have known about Nazis or Hitler or genocide or war? Nothing. What was I reacting to? My mother's stress, my mother's fear. Now, do I have an opportunity as an infant to seek help, escape, or to fight back? How do I deal with it? My brain tunes it out. It's not that I lie there as a two-month-old, oh, I gotta tune out. But that's an automatic brain mechanism, is to tune out when the stress is overwhelming. And let me read you a paragraph here from a California-based psychologist and spiritual teacher. And he says, "The child is very open and can feel the pain and suffering going on in its immediate environment. The child is aware of its own body, can also feel the tension, rigidity, and pain in the body of the mother or of anyone else he's with. If the mother is suffering, the baby suffers too. The pain never gets discharged." So when you have stressed parents, and we can talk about why parents are stressed, you actually have stressed infants. And one of the ways that a stressed infant will deal with the stress is to tune it up. What I'm suggesting to you, if we're seeing many, many more kids with ADHD these days, it's because parents are increasingly stressed. It's got nothing to do with genetics, or very little to do with genetics. I shouldn't say nothing. But the disease is not being passed on. First of all, it's not a disease. Secondly, it's not passed on genetically. What's actually happening is that the parenting environment is getting more and more stressed. And I'll talk to you more about that later. And after the break, I'll speak a bit more about the biology of ADHD and these other childhood conditions and how that occurs in relation to the environment. So, any questions before we have to break? Yes. Yes, please.
Does that stress start in the womb?
That stress starts in the womb. I'll be telling you after the break that the stress on the mother that can affect the child actually begins in the womb. Any other questions? Yeah.
Let me bring you the mic. Hold on just a second.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
If
Sure. Well, that's a good, so that's a good question. That's because no two kids have the same parents. That's why. Now let me tell you about my own family. Okay. So I have two brothers. I'm the oldest one. I have two brothers. I told you about my first year of life, but I told you about the beginning of my first year of life. You know, when I was 5 months old, my grandparents were killed in Auschwitz. My mother didn't know that, but she dreamt that the night they died, she dreamt that they died. And next morning, the breast milk dried up. And we lived under terrible conditions, as you can imagine. My father was away, and she didn't know he was dead or alive. Now, my next brother, Janos, was born in 1946, a year and a half after the liberation of Hungary by the Russian army. And this is before the communist dictatorship took over. It was a time of relative peace and optimism. That's my brother, Janos. My second brother, George, whose name, by the way, is not George Mathey, but George Mate. He was born in Canada, and he wants nothing to do with these funny European squiggles on names. You know. He was born to my parents in Canada in 1958, when my father was 49 almost, and my mother almost 40. And they're immigrants in a new country, learning a language with two adolescent sons, isolated from their culture and their network and all that. Guess which two boys have been diagnosed with ADHD? Now, do you think the three brothers had the same parents? Can you see that they didn't? Okay. And in the same way, no two children have the same parents. The reason no two children have the same parents is because the parents will have different circumstances at the time that they're born, that the kids are born. Number one, the parents' relationship might be different. The stress on the parents might be different. Also, of course, the birth order has some impact, so that I didn't have to share my mother's attention with anybody, but my brother never had that one-to-one relationship that I had. On the other hand, my brother never experienced the insult of losing that number one status and all of a sudden having to share it. Whereas, you know, it took me, I was 40 years old when I think first forgave my brother for being born. If I still have, that is. Secondly, as the British psychiatrist D.W. Winnicott pointed out, even if a mother could be the same mother to all eight of her kids, which she couldn't be, because, by the way, each child evokes something different. So it's not that you love more or that you favor one more than the other, but they just evoke some different reaction in you because they trigger different parts of you. But he said that even if a mother could be the same mother to all eight of her kids, those eight kids still all have the eight different mothers because they have different sensibilities. So they experience the parent differently. So no two children have the same childhood. And no two children have the same parents. And this is true even of identical twins. Less so, but it's still true. Okay, well, let's take a 15-minute break, and I'll see you then. By the way, my books are available at the back there. I'm happy to sign them.